College during a pandemic. Maine is a magnet for college students. More than 70,000 students come from all over the world to attend one of the state's 38 colleges and universities. But in the age of COVID, that's a real challenge. Like other colleges and universities nationwide, administrators here in Maine have been working hard to come up with a plan for fall semester and beyond. Some, including Unity College, have already announced that all classes will be online. Others are trying to hold as many classes as possible in classrooms, although those classrooms won't look the same. And all are talking plans to test students, faculty, and staff for COVID-19. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will talk with several Maine institutions of higher education about what the next semester may look like for them. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Of the many uncertainties brought on by the COVID-19 crisis, one is what to do about the upcoming fall semester for students attending college. Today, we're going to hear from a variety of guests on the different approaches Maine schools are taking to ensure that higher education continues in a safe environment. Joining me, Clayton Spencer, president of Bates College, and Dan Malloy, who is chancellor of the University of Maine system. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a family member, either in college or works at one of the many colleges and universities in Maine? What questions do you have about returning to school? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for taking the time to join us. I suspect you are incredibly busy right now trying to get all the pieces in place to make this happen for the fall. But I want to step back a little bit. Both of you are involved in one of those 30,000 foot views of what colleges and universities mean to Maine. And really some surprising numbers came out. Chancellor Malloy, I knew that Maine was a magnet for college students. I knew that many people came from other states and even other countries to go to school here. But you put some numbers to that. Tell us what tells us.
Sure. Well, ultimately became a framework for how schools would consider opening in the fall should they decide to do that or make other decisions. But one of the places that we decided to start, and this was all 38 universities and colleges, including the publics, this was a joint effort that we undertook. And one of the things we did was ask the folks at the University of Maine to do an analysis on the impact of higher education in Maine and to Maine's economy. And the reality is it's a $4.5 billion industry, making it one of the very largest industries in the entirety of the state. It's comprised of 38 colleges and universities, well over 20,000 employees, over 72,000 students as well, many of those in state, but a lot of students coming from out of state as well. It is an economic driver in and of itself, and so the health of that industry is important to the long-term trajectory of the state of Maine. And again, some of our universities, the publics, are overwhelmingly Maine student-driven, and we are producing the work product of the future, or at least the human capital of the future for the state of Maine.
Clayton, let me turn to you. Put me in your chair as COVID is unfolding and how you start thinking about fall. Is there a moment where you say, we're just going to have to do everything online? This is too scary?
No, there wasn't a moment when we said that. We basically said the opposite. We're not going to have a vaccine by the beginning of the coming year. We don't know when we'll have a vaccine at scale. So the question for us became, can you open the college and continue the forward momentum of our students while keeping our campus community and our local community healthy and safe? And if you can figure out a way to do that, and work your tails off, everybody on campus, faculty and staff included, to do that, then I think that's the responsibility. Because we have, our students are in course to degree. You've got to remember, we've got sophomores, juniors, and seniors who came to Bates pre-pandemic and need to finish their education. We have nearly 500 eager new first-year students coming. And the question is, can we do it? So we set about not saying whether, but how, always with the whether question in the back of the mind. Because if you can't do it safely, you can't do it at all. And we've spent every minute since our students left campus on March 13th working with the best public health experts to put a testing regime and everything else in place to make this possible.
All right, Clayton, you first. Tell me what college is going to look like at Bates come this fall, which is not really that far away from now.
It is not. I wish it were a little further, to be honest. Here's the deal. The first way it'll look different is the very first thing our students will do when they get out of the car. Usually they go straight and pick up their room keys. This year they're going to go to our ice rink, which will have been converted into a testing center. And they will get their first test to figure out if they have COVID positive, in some way contracted it en route to Bates. And then they will go move into their dorm rooms, and they will then need to stay in their dorm rooms for 24 hours until we can get the results of their tests back. So that's the biggest way right off the bat. And then there are many other ways I know we'll talk about during the course of the call. But the first thing any college has to do to bring back students in person is to set up a very robust testing regime. And we'll be working with the Broad Institute in Cambridge. It's an MIT-Harvard partnership. Bowden Colby will be working with the same group. And we will be testing our students on arrival, once again before classes start, and then twice weekly throughout the fall.
Twice weekly. Chancellor Malloy, for students in the University of Maine system, how will this semester be different?
Well, we have a different partnership, but and the vast majority of our students are already in Maine, so that they're not traveling from other places. But any student coming from outside of Maine will be required to be tested. Any faculty member or staff member returning to Maine from elsewhere will be required to be tested as well. We do have, a little different wrinkle in the sense that we will allow students to be tested elsewhere as long as their test meets the civil authority requirement. So right now that's about 72 hours prior to getting to the campus. So we're putting a lot of emphasis on our housed population, our out-of-state population, and our housed population will include our fraternities as well, where they exist. Jack's Labs is one of our partners with COVID-MD for the carrying out. We will do screening of multiple types on an ongoing basis. One of the things that we just did the other day was to use a sewage process. So we are going to analyze sewage coming from campuses to see whether the COVID 19 is in that sewage, because that's a way it can be measured. We'll be doing a percentage of our population on an ongoing basis. I've had the unfortunate requirement to actually have one of these tests done, and that is the kind of the gold standard, the deep dive into one's nose passages up to just below the brain. It's not the most pleasant thing in the world, but it's the best thing we can do to make sure that we're safe.
All right. And what about classes? Will it be a hybrid? Will some classes be online and some classes be in person, or as many classes as possible in person? Chancellor?
Well, you know, I wouldn't look at it that way. I think we're going to have lots of classes in person, and we're trying to make sure that all of our freshmen have a real good mixture of in-person classes. But we're working on a hybrid system largely, so students who don't want to come to the class, that a class that is otherwise given, can tie in over the Internet or the Zoom vehicle. We want students to be able to call up that experience if for any reason they were not able to be in the classroom or to view it live in that way. So it will absolutely be a mixture, and that has required some reassigning of coursework because we do have some faculty members in a system that's as large as ours that for health reasons can't be in a classroom. So we're also looking at how to improve the experience when that's the case. We have a large graduate student population. Perhaps we'll be using graduate students who are pursuing careers in higher education to fill in for some of the classroom experiences, looking at different ways that labs will be run. When they are run in person, they'll be substantially smaller numbers at a time. So it really will be a very much of a hybrid experience with an emphasis on making sure that any student who wants in-classroom experience will have that in the makeup of their coursework.
And Clayton, what about at Bates? What will students see?
I would say super similar. So let me just say the couple points to underscore. Our watchword in putting together the whole semester has been choice and flexibility. We invited all of our students to come back, but we wanted to make sure they only come back if they feel they can or if they're able to. And for instance, Bates has 8% international students, and some of those students won't be able to get visas. Some of them will not be able to travel here. So we actually, even the courses that we are offering in person, which will be about 75% of our courses, will have a major in-person on-campus component, but they need to also have a remote component so that international students or students in the United States who, for whatever reasons, choose not to come back or unable to come back can access them. We also have to be careful because if a student were to get a positive COVID test, they would need to be isolated for a period of time, and they need to be able to access their courses. So our on-campus emphasis is in person, and we're working to make sure every student, as Dan says, has a good mix. But we also need to make sure we're reaching our students remotely, too.
All right. Yep. Joining us now on the program is Unity College President Dr. Melek Peter Corey. Dr. Corey, thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Unlike Bates and the University of Maine, Unity has made a decision to have only online classes. And my understanding is that you do not even want students coming back to campus. Is that accurate?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. We have made a decision to teach remotely for now in order to make sure that we can support our students wherever they are. But we kind of took a different tact because we lack the economy of scale of the UMaine system and some of the resources of our sister colleges. So what we've done is we've actually abandoned the traditional semester model of five courses at a time and have gone towards what is known as a non-standard term, where our students are able to take one or two courses at a time and be full-time, and then using that shorter period of time in non-standard, they can be full-time taking one course at a time, allowing us to pivot to bringing students back when we are able and once we see the ability to bring them back in smaller cohorts than the one giant kind of residential experience that people are used to in the 18th, 19th, and 20th century. So yes, we are for the short term looking to be completely remote, but we hope to have the ability to pivot once the unknowns become known.
Interesting. So students for the beginning of the school year taking one or two classes very intensively, not living on campus, doing those classes predominantly from home, correct? And then
yes.
And then your hope is that to be able to bring students to campus soon.
Yes, and our curriculum has always had a very expeditionary and highly tactile pedagogy. So our faculty right now are working with a number of instructional designers and curriculum designers to figure out how to also change the mind's eye of remote. There is a mind's eye that remote means in your laptop, in your basement. But we've been seeing now with our distance education program for years where students are actually using the local communities where they are, whether it's their local fauna, their local environment, their local urban communities, and really using their local communities as a fabric and a tapestry to which to bring richer communication using technology and really getting beyond the false dichotomy of online versus face-to-face.
All right. What has been the reaction of faculty and the student body?
Our faculty and staff in particular were very, very concerned about opening at all costs. And because of our size and the size of our institution, which does not have the abundance of space of some larger campuses, there was lots of support, I would say, almost unanimous support from the faculty and staff to start remotely. Mm-hmm. And once we were able to do this shorter period, there was a lot of relief that we did not have to wait an entire semester before we could pivot, and that got a lot of buy-in. With our students, as you can imagine, it's mixed. Some really appreciated what we were doing, and some are really disappointed because there is a very strong community in the residential 4-year, and they cannot wait to come back.
Mm. Dr. Corey, will Unity charge the same tuition this fall?
Actually, we've also abandoned the concept of a lot of private schools do, where we charge a large tuition and then give a discount. That works for institutions with heavy endowments, but kind of getting away from the false discount model. So we've changed our tuition model to be on a per credit basis, with which we have a set tuition for our online programs, a set tuition for our face-to-face programs, and a set tuition for what we're calling our signature courses, which is courses that are immersed outside of our own property. So we have completely redesigned our tuition model to really bring down the cost to try to provide access. Because one of the things we're seeing is a lot of deserving students really can't afford this, you know, the one big sticker price, even with a discount. So we're really going towards affordability, access, and flexibility. And so we have completely changed our tuition model, which is much more affordable, but also allows a student not to have to take out a giant loan and have to be here for a whole 9 months if they didn't want to be.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. That's Unity College's president, Dr. Melick Peter Corey. Turning back to you, Chancellor Malloy, what about tuition at UMaine? You know, there are two really important things going on here. It's more expensive to set up all this technology to make remote learning possible. On the other hand, there's a pandemic and people's families are making tough choices right now. What is the UMaine system doing?
Well, with respect to baccalaureate, master's, and doctoral degrees, you'd be hard-pressed to find a better bargain than that which is offered by the University of Maine system, all of our institutions. So we run on a pretty tight budget to begin with. And so in keeping with the Unity model, we have a charge for a semester. We have a charge that's based on the number of credits that will be taken. And that system will remain in place. There will be reductions with respect to room and board to reflect a different time frame and schedule. For instance, we will end on-campus instruction on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving and then continue through the end of the semester post Thanksgiving online. So we'll go to all online at that point, including examination, which will take place on a distance basis. So to reflect that change, we've lowered the cost with respect to the room costs. We also understand that we're not going to be able to provide the full service level of dining options that we had adopted traditionally over the last 5 or 6 years. In exchange for that, we are reducing that price as well.
So even though, and what I've read, and tell me if this is wrong, there will be a slight tuition increase, 2.5%. You believe for most students that will be balanced out by they'll be paying less for a room and board.
Well, for the students who have room and board, and the increase does not have anything to do with the pandemic. That was a schedule that was agreed to actually long before I came to the system. I inherited that. But we are mindful of our obligation to provide a cost-effective education. And again, I think with respect to baccalaureate, master's, and doctoral degrees, you won't find a price structure that is as low as ours.
Sure. And Clayton, what about your costs? Is tuition going up or down in the face of the pandemic?
It's going up a small amount in line with actually lower than previous years. And our deal is we will offer full room and board reimbursement to anybody who is studying remotely. And that's a significant reduction off of the usual overall cost. And then otherwise, we'll be offering both a residential experience and a remote learning experience at once. And students are able to choose which they take. The tuition for both will be the same because they're effectively the same courses taught in different modalities mm-hmm. by the faculty. And we have allocated extra funds for financial aid for any families who've been affected economically by the pandemic. So will meet the need that way.
So much to talk about, but we have to take a break. We're talking about college this fall during a pandemic. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood's North Atlantic Shrimp, caught in the wild and available ready to eat in the freezer at your local Hannaford. And the Maine Office of Tourism, reminding you that right now is the perfect time to revisit and reconnect with the places Mainers call home, by returning to favorite spots and discovering new ones and exploring everything that has made Maine uniquely Maine. For inspiration and itineraries, go to visitmaine.com.
Some former Homeland Security officials say President Trump calling up federal border agents to deal with urban unrest is misguided.
Well, they're clearly the wrong group to be doing this. I mean, this is not something they're trained to do. My guess is that they would probably also very clearly tell you it's not something they want to do.
That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that's coming up tonight at 4 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. A special thanks to Catherine from Winthrop for their donation of a 1997 Volvo 850. Donations to the Maine Public Car Donation Program make a big difference for your public radio station, and in most cases result in a tax deduction for you. Towing is free, and the great feeling you get from supporting the programming that you enjoy and count on is priceless. If you're wondering what to do with your car, please consider Maine Public. It's easy. Just go to mainepublic.org, click on support, and then the Maine Public Vehicle Donation Program. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. On our program today, we're talking about how Maine's colleges and universities are preparing for the fall semester. Joining me for the hour, Bates College President Clayton Spencer and University of Maine Chancellor Dan Malloy. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Thomas College Provost Thomas Edwards. Thanks for joining us, Provost Edwards.
Thank you.
What's the plan at Thomas College for fall semester?
The plan for Thomas, I think, is similar to what we've heard from Bates and the University of Maine system. We will be having on-campus operations, taking some of the similar steps to protect health and safety of students, faculty, and staff. So we'll have smaller classrooms. We'll have reduced residence hall capacity. We'll be social distancing, and we'll be doing testing as well. So we're looking along the same lines as many of the other colleges and universities here in Maine, that we really have a responsibility to educate in the midst of the pandemic, and we think that, like the other colleges and universities in Maine, we have a pretty good path forward.
I'm wondering if you feel as though you have a little bit of an advantage in that you don't have as many students coming from as far away as both Bates and the University of Maine system. I understand really most of Thomas College's students are from Maine.
That's correct, and that plays into a lot of our planning and plays into our operations for the fall term. And we're really gratified when we look at the overall state of Maine experience in terms of the incidence of the virus here in Maine. So that gives us some confidence in terms of our operations moving forward. So working with a population that primarily comes from a state where the incidence of the virus is low, and coupled that with the measures that we're going to be taking here on campus with all the different pieces related to classroom capacity and smaller class sizes, which is also a real advantage for Thomas. We don't have a lot of classes, large lecture classes that we needed to adapt and change. We think that that's going to be a real advantage here for the entire community.
Okay, before I let you go, how will student life be different?
student life is going to be a little bit different. Certainly, for example, we've seen most of the colleges with collegiate athletics have faced issues related to the canceling of conference games and things like that. But we still think that we might be able to find some alternative athletic schedules. We're certainly going to place a heavier emphasis on recreation, leadership, wellness, those kinds of things. Certainly things that we can do in the outdoors. We've got a beautiful campus here on campus with a 5K trail and things like that. So we think that we can adapt and make life certainly meet our basic mission of educating students inside and outside the classroom, but we're just going to have to adapt and do it in a slightly different way and take advantage of the environment that we have with us here on campus.
Tom, thanks for giving us a call. That's Thomas Edwards, who's provost at Thomas College. I want to ask you, Clayton, and you, Chancellor Malloy, both the same question, and that is, at what point, what would change everything? I know you've probably both, Clayton Spencer, I know you've probably thought about this a lot. If
sure.
Fill in the blank happens in October, everything changes.
Sure. Well, number one, I will tell you we're monitoring what's happening in the country at large and globally now and are very encouraged by how well the pandemic has been managed in Maine. So far, so good here. And there are several things that could happen. One is an outbreak on campus that is not broadly reflected in the state, but that might be more than we could manage. And we hope that our testing regimen twice weekly, every student, that's mandatory. And if they don't want to do that, they don't come back, that we would actually catch cases very early before you got to a situation of an outbreak. The other thing that would influence our decision is looking at the incidence rate in Androscoggin County or Maine, or the hospital capacity rate. We don't want to put a strain on the healthcare system, and we don't want to get into a situation where people on our campus or in our community don't feel safe. So there's a series of very established metrics, and we're all over them every day now, and so far so good, and we will continue to be all over them. And we, too, have gone to a modular course system. We're doing two courses for 7.5 weeks for the first half, and then two courses for 7.5 weeks for the second half of the semester, so that if we needed to make a change quickly, we could mm-hmm. pivot, and those courses could be done remotely.
All right, Dan Malloy.
Well, I think we've proved that we can pivot pretty quickly. We actually completed 210,000 hours of instruction online, and we hope that won't be a mandatory requirement because of an additional outbreak. As Clayton said, we were very lucky to be in Maine, which over the last 10 days has been in the top five winners in this terrible situation. And what I mean by that is the lowest rates of new infection, lowest rates of hospitalization, lowest rates of death. So we hope that continues. And quite frankly, that's part, I think, of all of our collective planning, those of us who will be opening in multiple modalities, including mm-hmm. In-classroom experience. But you've asked a very fair question, so let me give you an answer. We have set aside rooms where there is housing at all of our campuses to be held vacant to be able to isolate students. We will monitor what's going on. When all of the schools in Maine switched to online learning, within a period of days, there actually weren't even any known cases in Maine. We now know that the virus is present. It will continue to be present in Maine, albeit we hope and expect in very low numbers. So we will have a matrix by which we look at our system on an individual campus basis and make decisions about what's going on that individual campus. Now, Bates mm-hmm. has one primary campus. We have many campuses. The University of Maine Augusta actually does instruction, I think, at 35 different places. And the University of Southern Maine is in a very different place than the University of Maine Fort Kent. So we'll be prepared to make decisions on an individual campus basis, given any outbreak that might occur. Again, we will take every step we can to minimize that from happening. I will also tell you that we will have substantially smaller numbers of persons housed at our universities, so that we've made a conscious decision to limit that number, in part to have rooms be set aside for isolation.
All right. On the line with us now, Ben Simons, a senior at Bowdoin College, majoring in psychology and religious studies. I understand, Ben, Bowdoin is not bringing all the students back to campus. As a senior, what will your fall semester look like?
Bowdoin is bringing back about 30% capacity, and the vast majority of that number is going to be the incoming first years and transfer students. So most of the upperclassmen, like myself, will be studying fully remotely online for the entirety of the semester.
How do you and your classmates feel about that?
I mean, there's definitely a sense of disappointment. You know, everyone wants to be on campus, but we also understand that, you know, the pandemic is real and it's still present. And I think a lot of people understand the decision from the perspective of public health. I just think that there's an overall sense of disappointment and also a bit of frustration with the way that Bowdoin is, you know, failing to support their students somewhat in a few areas outside of the campus and through remote learning.
And I know that another area of concern was taking a leave of absence. Tell us how this policy has been adjusted.
Yeah, so Bowdoin was expecting a high number of students to request taking leaves of absence. So in response to that, they chose to change the leave of absence policy to now require students to reapply after deciding to take their leave. And so while they did guarantee that students would eventually be let back into the school, they were not guaranteeing students would be allowed back into Bowdoin at the semester that they requested. So I think that threw a lot of students off, and it certainly made us feel like, you know, a bit discouraged from making the decision to take leave of absence, even if, you know, we felt like that might have been the right decision for us.
Yeah, but you're not going to do that, right?
Yeah, no, I chose to enroll. A big reason why was because of that policy.
Mm. Well, Ben, good luck to you, and good luck to you your senior year. Ben Simons entering his senior year at Bowdoin College. We're going to go now to Joseph Cassidy, who's president of Southern Maine Community College. President Cassidy, thanks for giving us a call.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell me about your plans for the fall.
So some common themes that I've been hearing on the program. At SMCC, we're going to do a hybrid approach to this fall semester. We will have a lot of classes that have been converted to the online learning environment. And yet, as a community college, we've got a number of programs, trade-based programs, healthcare-based programs that need to have live instruction. So by moving about 70% roughly of our classes to an online environment, we're going to be able to open the campus up, spread people out, keep them safe, and then provide that required and essential hands-on instruction, everything from precision manufacturing to nursing and everything in between. So we've got a pretty good program in place. I've heard the theme with some of my colleagues. We are going to reduce pretty dramatically the number of kids that are students that are going to live on campus. We're going to have only single occupancy rooms in our dorms, and we've got a great safety program in place, and we're going to provide the learning that we need to for the state of Maine.
How are you going to do this financially?
Well, we're Mainers, right? We dig deep and we pull together. Look, there certainly have been, financial challenges to the COVID experience. Having said that, the community college system and SMCC particularly, we run a tight ship and we're very frugal with our money and with the people's money. So we're going to get through this. We certainly expect it'll be a challenge over the next year or two, but the CARES Act is out there, and we'll be flexible and we'll be frugal and prudent. So we're going to make it through.
All right. Well, President Cassidy, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck this year. Joe Cassidy, president of Southern Maine Community College. I want to get some questions from the public in, even though we have so many callers. This is from Amanda. I am an adjunct instructor at multiple universities in the Portland area. I'm curious if there's a discussion on the role of adjuncts and adjunct works, but specifically during this time, especially for those of us who teach at multiple institutions. Are there considerations and or precautions in place in terms of cross-campus spread? Are adjuncts able to receive COVID testing through the college? Dan, I suspect this is more applicable to you. What do you think?
I think those are good questions to raise. I believe that testing will be available initially for people who would be considered part-time faculty. And that's how we refer to adjuncts as part-time faculty. But what I would honestly say is I think we'll have to provide a fuller answer to that, to the issues raised. I will also tell you that adjuncts are extremely important in our provision of education. We are happy to be able to call on real expertise that may not otherwise be justified on an individual campus basis, but can be justified on a semester basis, and so or a shared basis. So this is an important issue. I apologize for not having a complete answer, but I promise early next week we will.
All right. Well, we do need to take another quick break. When we come back, more of the discussion on the return to college this fall. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco. Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping Maine homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine rebates and loans with audits and insulation. And Woodford F&B in Portland, launching the Woodford Boat Club with patio dining 7 days a week. WoodfordFB.com. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On July 23, 1998, Governor Angus King attached the last panel on the world's largest revolving and rotating globe, Eartha, in Yarmouth. The panel included the state of Maine. The globe is owned and was designed by the Yarmouth-based Delorme Map Company. The globe weighs approximately 5,600 pounds, or 2,500 kilograms, and was built to a scale of 1 to 1 million, on which 1 inch represents 16 miles. As with most globes, it is mounted at the same axial tilt as the Earth itself.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of DN Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine! Today's Maine CDC briefing on COVID-19 is scheduled to take place a half hour later than usual at 2:30. Before that, from 2 to 2:30, we'll broadcast Here and Now. The 2:30 briefing will also be available at Maine Public Television, mainepublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page. In addition, each day's address is archived at mainepublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw will take place at 2:30 this afternoon.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We are discussing what colleges and universities in Maine are planning in the face of the pandemic. My guests for the hour, UMaine System Chancellor Daniel Malloy and Bates College President Clayton Spencer. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Rose Davis. She is a fifth-year student at Husson University in the doctorate program studying physical therapy. She's also a tour guide at Husson. Rose, congratulations on being accepted to the doctorate program. Good for you. Tell me You're expecting for the fall in terms of classes and adjustments because of COVID.
Well, I know, as you said, being a tour guide, I've seen a whole bunch of tables and chairs being rearranged, some chairs being taken out of classrooms just to maintain the social distancing. I know students are going to be expected to wear masks in any of the buildings. Specifically for my program, we usually have, there's about 40 students in my class, and I know they've separated us into smaller groups to maintain smaller class sizes. So those are just some of the things that I know they're expecting to do.
All right. I love that you're a tour guide, and I know that so many schools aren't even offering tours right now. Tell me what it's like to take a tour at Husson University for a high school student thinking about considering Husson University.
Well, right now, they're pretty much as they were beforehand, with the exception of having to wear a mask if you are coming. We are trying to maintain social distancing throughout the whole tour as well, so staying 6 feet apart between different groups of people and myself. We're only taking three families at a time on a tour right now, and each student can only have one person. So only a total of six people, which is smaller than some of the tours we've had in the past. And as well, we aren't taking students from all over the country. Right now, it's only New England states, with the exception of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So not everybody right now. We are also offering virtual tours as well, though, for students who are a little further away but still want to view campus.
Okay. Everybody's trying all sorts of creative things. Rose, thank you exactly. So much for joining us. Rose Davies, a fifth-year student and tour guide at Husson University. Going now to the president of St. Joseph's College in Maine, James DeLugos. Thank you so much for joining us. And tell us how St. Joseph's is preparing for fall.
Well, thank you for having me. We actually, as I've been listening to the show this afternoon, it sounds like most of our colleagues in Maine are doing more or less the same things. We'll be able to offer our classroom-based instruction, both in the classroom and then remotely, synchronously at the same time. So a student who needed to attend class from a residence hall room or from home could do that. We have made social distancing practice all over campus, so classroom furniture has been rearranged. The dining hall has been rearranged. We have a plan for moving students through the dining hall so that we can feed everyone in the appropriate time and in the appropriate ways. We're moving some activities outside. We have set aside one of our smaller residence halls as an expanded health center to provide some more isolation space for students who may need that. And we are working very carefully to make sure that our faculty and staff have safe working conditions when they come back to campus, if they need to. Many of us have been working from home since the middle of March, and we expect that a good number of people will continue to do that. So we want to have as health and safe a campus environment as possible.
All right. And I want to ask you one thing we really haven't touched on most in this program, but is sort of underlying everything, is how important all of these colleges and universities are in Maine to the communities that host them. And if you can talk a little bit, James, about how important St. Joseph's is to the Standish-Wyndham area. And was that part of your consideration when deciding what to do this fall?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. That's a great question. Yes. So the economic impact of St. Joe's is probably about $75 to $85 million a year. A good bit of the tuition revenue that the college realizes each year actually comes from out of the state of Maine. So we bring a lot of money from out of state into Maine, and that is a significant driver in the local economy. We have just under 500 employees, most of whom live in the Standish-Wyndham area, although many also live in Portland and around and beyond. And so we are a very big part of the community. The campus has been a friendly and open place to the community members for a long time. We're working hard to figure out how to continue that, even as we are monitoring more closely what happens on campus. So for Standish and for Wyndham, I think the college being here and being open and being providing continuous employment for all the wonderful colleagues is a big concern. We've been able to maintain all of our employment thus far, and we look forward to continuing to do that with a campus-based instruction for the coming year.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a call. That's James DeLugos, president of St. Joseph's College in Maine. I want to return, Clayton, to the call we had from the Bowdoin College student. What is Bates doing in terms of taking a leave of absence? Do you have many students doing that? And is that something you are encouraging, allowing, or discouraging?
So I will tell you, our mantra going into this is choice and flexibility. So we have told our students that we welcome them back to campus, and we've done a survey. It's very flexible. Students can change their mind up to ongoing basis if they don't feel comfortable. But so students can freely choose to come back to campus to take a gap year if they would be between high school and college, and or to take a leave. And we've been very liberal in handing those out. So it's absolutely free. There was never we wanted to make sure that people who come back to campus come back knowing what they're getting into, feeling comfortable with it, and feeling excited about it, even under new conditions. So we've been very easy on that stuff. Not many students are choosing that option.
I'm going to go to an email from Jean. My grandchild will be a freshman at UMO this year. All of his classes will be online, and his family wonders, what are the reasons for him to live on campus when the clubs, music groups he wants to join will probably not be able to meet so he can participate them? What do we suggest to him as he decides whether to be on campus or do his classes from home? What are the benefits of on-campus living?
Who was that post?
Oh, that's for you, Chancellor. Yeah, this is somebody going to UMO.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it is a personal decision, and a student should make that decision based on their circumstances. If you're not taking a class online, then you're not going to be taking if you want to take a class in person, there will be those opportunities. It won't be as full or robust as it was previously because, as I stated, we have some faculty members who simply can't put themselves at risk by teaching that class that way. Or, for instance, civil authority prevents us from having classes over a certain size that have traditionally been large lecture halls. But it seems to me that the bulk of the question is what is the experience going to be? Well, it's going to be the experience of living through COVID-19. I think we all have grown and learned hard lessons by living through the first phase of COVID-19. I think there are additional lessons to learn. We know that a number of our students want to be on a campus, want to share that experience with fellow students, and be in a position to do just that. On the other hand, it will be a different experience, I don't think the book has been written on the totality of that experience and how it will play out over the course of the semester.
All right, and kind of a follow-up question. This is from Andrew. What plans does the University of Maine have in place to deal with certain aspects of student life over which administration has little influence, namely Greek life and partying? How does the university plan to protect faculty and staff from students and students from themselves?
Well, I was that Clayton or me? I'll take
it. No, that's you. Again, that's a University of Maine question.
I'll take a stab at it. Yeah, sure. So with respect to that, obviously students will be asked to take a pledge, and each of those pledges will be somewhat different depending on the campus that you're attending. But, you know, we expect students to comport themselves in line with civil authority directions and to keep a distance. You know, if you were at the University of Maine campus, there are bear tracks around reminding everyone to stay 6 feet away. Everyone will be required to wear a cover over their nose and mouth in any building and, for the most part, anywhere on that particular campus. And quite frankly, that will be enforced because civil authority has required it. We're requiring it as part of, in essence, the contract of obtaining your education at one of our universities. So there will be these differences, and people, we're not hiding that. We're actually doing a series of student and for that matter, faculty, and for that matter, parent discussions being held online at all of our universities throughout the summer.
All right. Here's a question from Lucy, and I'll have you answer this, Clayton. How much input do the students get from staff, professors, other faculty, and students to make the decisions?
About what we're doing for the fall?
Right.
We have had, we've had two faculty, senior staff teams, faculty, senior staff, and line staff teams, one called fall planning and one called college finances, working since about mid-April to make these decisions together. We have had regular consultation with student government and other student groups, and then we are involving a whole segment of college leaders in ongoing planning for just the question you were just talking about. How do you take an affirmative norming approach to getting students to take the precautions they need and make the adaptations they need in their own social lives, and let's call it out of class, out of co-curricular, college-sponsored activities lives, to make this work and keep the campus safe and healthy and keep the year ongoing. And so we'll be using students creatively to really be at the heart of shaping that effort. We've also had
town halls, sometimes multiple times a week, almost every week for at least the last 6 weeks. So trying to be very communicative, very transparent, and taking in questions all the time and assisting.
All right. I'm going to go to a question from, or a comment actually from Kirsten on Facebook. Kristen on Facebook. I am a high-risk, older UMaine Augusta student, and I have known people back in Massachusetts who have died from COVID and lost my father in a nursing home that had a terrible issue with it. I was very impressed with how UMA responded to the pandemic. I feel lucky that I can take so many online classes. I take the risk seriously since I have family that need me. And Chancellor Malloy, I think that's such a great comment because we think of college students as young. We think of college students as living together in dorms, but that is really far from the reality for many UMaine and community college campuses, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. And I, again, I think that drives our decision making. So wherever possible, we'll deliver courses in multiple modalities so that someone might be taking that in a classroom, someone might be looking at it live on their computer, and someone might be calling it up subsequently on their computer to catch up with how that course played out. We're modernizing 164 classrooms across the state of Maine as we speak this summer, microphones being installed, other systems being installed. To the classrooms that we won't get to, we are also creating carts. So the ability to have multiple modality delivery will be substantially enhanced over what we previously had. For instance, when we had to announce on March 12th that we would be closing at the end of the week. So it was a very closing, I should say, in-person learning. So it will be a very different experience, and that question really points out the other side of the equation. People have a fear. We have to protect them in that situation. This person, because they're elderly or have lost other loved ones, we understand that that's part of our obligation as well. We're not telling students they have to come back to our campus. In point of fact, we're saying if you don't want to come back to campus, then we understand that, and we're making courses available to you. And that really is the other side of the equation.
Well, thank you so much. So much to talk about, so little time. Our guest today, University of Maine System Chancellor Danil Malloy and Bates College President Clayton Spencer. Stay tuned for the latest CDC Maine briefing with Dr. Nirav Shah. It's on a little later today, 2:30 on Maine Public Radio, television, on the web, and Facebook. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7 this evening. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.